WIOX is supported by the following community underwriters. Caldwell Banker Timberland Properties, with six offices located throughout the Catskills, serving buyers and sellers of land and homes for over 40 years. Timberland Properties agents live, work, and play locally, with offices in Margaretville, Stamford, Roscoe, Delhi, Sydney, and Boyceville. TimberlandProperties.net, 845-586-3321. Hanna Mountain Resort and Country Club, with 29 guest rooms, restaurant, and bar, specializing in wedding packages, including rehearsal dinner, ceremony, reception, farewell brunch, and accommodations for guests. And golf memberships are available for Hanna's 18-hole championship golf course. Information at hannacountryresort.com or 845-586-4849. Qualterry's Nursery and Garden Center on Route 30 in Roxbury, open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Christmas trees, live and cut, wreaths, roping, and large and small kissing balls, holiday centerpieces, and plants. Qualterry's Nursery and Garden Center. Smiles required. Early orders accepted. 607-326-4282. 607-326-4282. Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center on State Route 10 in Walton for disposal and recycling. Open 7:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center information about materials and disposal fees at 607-832-5800 or see the Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center link at WIOXradio.org.
Hi, this is Audie Martello, host of the Catskills Cafe, inviting you to take a seat with me in my virtual coffee house and listen to classic folk, folk rock and bluegrass, new and traditional sounds, plus interviews with indie and established artists. Come and join me every Sunday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. right here on WIOX Roxbury, community radio, live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains, at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20 and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi on smart devices through the Radio FM app and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Oh, things are good, Ryan.
You?
Yeah. Good. Yeah, what have you been up to?
I've been hunting most of the week.
Yeah.
And I was successful, so
successful on something I've never done before. And I got a bear.
Very cool. Bear meat is good.
Oh, my goodness. I haven't had a bear steak in probably 10 years or more, and it's long enough to forget, you know? You know it's good, but you forget how good. And we had a little backstrap for dinner last night, and oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's good meat.
It's got to be the most underrated thing out there. I mean, I don't know why people ever think it tastes bad. You know what I've heard is that the fat can go rancid quickly if you mistreat it. It's not like deer where you can, you know. It's kind of hard to screw up deer meat.
It has obviously a lower melting point, would it be?
Yeah, it's a totally different fat. You know, it's a very greasy fat, kind of like pork. And I can see that. You know, if you let that thing hang in 45 degrees, you'd probably have problems. Where a deer, you can get away with it for a day.
Oh, for 2 days.
Or more, yeah.
If the hide's on.
So I think that now that I've experienced it myself, I got to believe that people are just screwing it up and accidentally letting it go bad.
Yeah.
Holy cow, is that good meat.
It's excellent. I haven't had one myself. I got a small bear during muzzle loading season, maybe 7 years ago, maybe. It's great meat.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that. There was a guy named Pappy that was in the Bushkill Rod and Gun Club. He's since passed away, but he always told hunting club members there it was the best meat.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, looking back, our camp has all our records back to 1954 when the camp was established, and there's one guy on there. He'd go to one spot on one mountain and shoot a bear many of the years he hunted, and I never understood why, but he must have just loved the meat.
Yeah.
And that's all they would say at camp is they'd drop him off in the truck on the way to where everybody else was going, and he'd walk over the bank, and he sat right there all day long, and...
And we'd see a bear, huh?
And a lot of years he'd shoot a bear.
Bear is very useful. As you said, the meat's good. The fat, if it's rendered, is excellent. It makes excellent pie crusts. And it's not strong flavored, so if you add it to dishes and stuff, it's really good.
You could replace it for any shortening, any Crisco. Yeah, I guess it was even used as a currency at one time. You know, people measured themselves and about how much bear fat they had or could sell. Could use for shoe leather, waterproofing shoe leathers.
So have you rendered it yet or not yet?
That's tonight's job.
Tonight?
Yep.
Yeah, you don't have to go crazy, but it should be totally hard at room temperature.
Yeah. So, how did you do it? Because everything I've read, people say a crock pot on low heat is a great temperature to do it, and you just strain it off.
No. You can do it in a steel saucepan.
Yeah.
That's how I've always done it. I do deer all the time, but when I did bear, I did it the same way. Just don't go too high. As one guy says, you're not frying it, right? You shouldn't see smoke.
Yeah.
But take a potato masher.
Yeah.
And just keep mashing. First of all, cut it in small pieces. Not that small, but cube-sized pieces.
Okay.
And then there's going to be some meat attached to those probably, because you're probably not getting all the meat off, I would imagine. Maybe you are.
It's hard to do, right?
Yeah. So then you just keep mashing it once in a while, and eventually it forms, I guess, what Southerners would call chitlins, right? That's the fried meat that separates.
Mm-hmm.
And when those are almost burnt, almost, but not burnt, and you can eat those, by the way, they're really good.
Like a pork rind kind of thing?
They're really good, actually. Okay. They're even good on a deer, and deer fat is not bad, actually. It's the texture of deer fat. It's terrible. Deer fat is the worst, like if you're just cooking with it with a steak. But once you've rendered it, actually, you can eat it. It's just the texture is weird. It fills up your whole mouth. It's very, very weird fat. But, yeah, so then strain it through cheesecloth,
mm-hmm.
which is very important, and that's it. You put it in a ball jar and seal it, and it should be crystal clear, clean, white, and solid at room temperature. And that's how you know you did it right.
All right. Well,
yeah.
I'll report back because, like I said, I'm gonna.
I would freeze it anyway.
Start
though.
That process tonight.
You don't have to freeze it, but I would put it in the freezer.
And that makes it easier to cut and.
Well, just...
Oh, you mean the finished product?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you don't have to, but I would do it anyway.
Yeah. I was also reading, people said to get it firmed up to clean it up and cut it.
Oh, yeah.
While you're processing it.
Even better is a Pyrex jar that's wider. That way you can use it more easier.
Okay.
Right? Because that glass is meant to be in an oven. Obviously, the plastic isn't, but let it cool down, put the plastic on, put it in the freezer. That way, when you want to use it, you can use a scoop instead of fishing for it through a ball jar.
Gotcha.
Even a wide mouth is kind of a pain.
Yep, it makes a lot of sense.
I render deer fat every year and for soap, and it may not be good for cooking, but it makes excellent hard soap, deer fat. But that's how I do it. I've never had a problem so far doing what I just said with the potato masher is key. You know, because it gets that fat out more.
Yeah,
you squeeze down
a lot of time.
Yeah, but you can do it in steel, even though steel conducts heat very fast. It's fine, as long as, because once it starts to get that fat on the bottom, it's not going to burn as readily.
Okay.
But crock pot, you don't have to do. I mean, I saw people were doing it for like hours and hours, and I don't understand that.
It shouldn't take that long.
No, it should not. I mean, it should not take that long.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't, bears a lot more fat. And when I did that little bear, I got a gallon of fat. That's a tremendous amount. But a deer, I mean, it's not going to take, I don't know, a few hours at tops. Tops.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you're working at it, you just got to work it.
You know how much I'll actually do, because holy cow, we packed the thing out of the woods, and I weighed the set. We were keeping all the fat separate when we trimmed it off in the woods, and you know, I weighed that sack when I got home, and that's 37 pounds.
Yeah.
So that's plenty.
Oh my God.
Plenty more than I'll ever probably deal with, but
probably last 2 years.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be happy to give some away too. So if I got a few gallons off it, I'd be happy to barter or whatever. But
yeah, I mean, maybe, but
give it away.
If you like baking and stuff or know someone, that's the deal. I mean, that makes the best, really does make the best pie crust.
My wife is so excited about it. She wants it.
My wife never bakes, but when she made an apple pie, it was the best. And everyone knows it's difficult to make a good apple pie crust. Without any practice, it came out perfect.
Hmm.
So tonight's topic is why hunt in 2021. We did this 2 years ago, why hunt in 2019. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. You know, when you have so much access to information at your fingertips, there's probably more technology in a cell phone today than, no, there definitely is in a cell phone today than anyone could dream about in the 1980s, right? So, but there's still something about accessing, you know, woodlands or even the backyard for hunting that to me is, it doesn't come close to what's, you know, on your phone. So
yeah,
I think there's still a reason for it. But anyway, some hunting background, loss and regrowth. Basically, no one was hunting, you know, late 19th, early 20th century, or there was very few game species. That's when our farms peaked in land clearing, and the forest was at its least amount, you know, from about 1880 to 1920. Right? Then you have the Lacey Act, 1900, forbade interstate commerce and wildlife, and removed wildlife from private ownership to the public trust, and the development of fair chase. And I might talk about this next week, about this public trust doctrine. I've been researching it all day today.
Have you?
Yeah, I think it's a myth, but I'm going to get into it next week about the myth of private markets extirpating wildlife, and how it was maybe more about habitat than anything else. But not to say it wasn't market hunting, but I think there was more going on there. And after researching it, I'm even more convinced.
That's a big topic. Big can of worms.
It's a huge topic. And I read this guy's thesis from 1982 on it, and then in 2005 with bison. It's hard to find anything on white-tailed deer. But bison's really interesting because he goes through the whole history of the eradication, extirpation of bison. And it's more about who owned bison or didn't own bison, I think, that led to its demise. But anyway, that's next week. I'm not going to get into that. We're just going to talk about why hunt 2021.
Okay.
But hunting and conservation. So basically, the Lacey Act, 1900, you have a whole group of what is it, the Progressive Conservation Movement, which is like Theodore Roosevelt, the father of forestry, Gifford Pinchot. And this is really starts leading to the North American model for wildlife conservation, which is what wildlife agencies in the various states of the United States manage wildlife under. So state agencies are heavily reliant, for better or worse, on hunting. Licensing, excise taxes, you have the Pittman-Robertson Act. When you buy, a lot of people don't know this, but if you buy your Patagonia hiking stuff, you don't pay an extra tax as far as I know. But if you, if it's camouflage and it's for hunting, I believe you do.
It's all firearms and ammunition. And there's some tax on bow hunting and related instruments there too.
Yeah. But, it's a lot. It might even be your rangefinder, to be honest. Just about anything.
Yeah,
it might be anything.
Who knows?
Hunting related, but I could be wrong on that one. So there's the Dingell Johnson. There's various acts that.
Dingell Johnson is fishing gear, right?
Is it? I forget.
I believe so.
I think you're right. So hunting demographics. This data is provided by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Only 5% of Americans actually hunt. Half of what it was 50 years ago. In 1991, there was 14.1 million hunters. 2016, 11.5 million. And 1991, share of adults was 7.3%. 2016, 4.4%. I think there's been an uptick with COVID 2019, as you were saying, John, right? Because...
Yeah, there's no doubt hunting license sales are up. And I think that's a lot to do with accessibility. You have to have a go through a hunter safety education course to get your hunting license. And during COVID lockdown times, that information went online. So people were able to get their hunting licenses or get their hunter ed certification online and then go get their hunting license. So hunting license sales went way up in the last 2 years. And I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll have to ask around, but I definitely think I see more people in the woods. Maybe not more people, but I see people in places I never saw them before.
Yeah.
And it's got to be just due to something, right? I don't know what's pushing people further and further back in, but that's where I always hunted, and now I'm starting to see some trickle effects.
Hiking, I can say I've seen cars parked in areas with no trails. I know they're bushwhacking, and that's rare. That was not the case before until COVID. You know, but things, trends come and go. You know, when I was an assistant ranger in 2004 and 2005, all the sign that I saw from camping was from the 70s and 80s. And, you know, maybe we're in a trend now where people are starting to get back in the backcountry. I'm talking about remote areas, camping, you know. Yeah, there'd be a lone hemlock stand in the middle of nowhere. And there'd be a, you know, a little fire ring in it. And, you know, there'd be those pull tabs from the 70s or 80s,
mm-hmm.
You know, old stuff. Sometimes even the 19th century you'd find stuff, you
wow.
know. Yeah, from, like, camps from bark days where there, yeah, bark peelers and stuff like that. But, so anyway, hunting, for the, even though it's, there's an uptick last year, the overall trend is hunting is declining. We'll see if that continues. But as Tom Eberlin says from the University of Wisconsin, we've had him on in the past. He talked about trends with hunter demographics. There's smaller family sizes, urbanization, anti-hunting sentiment. He believes that the hunting population is going to be extinct by 2050. I'm not that pessimistic. I think it's hunters are always going to be around. I really do believe that, especially with the locavore movement. People want to eat something close to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They control.
Hunting's not going extinct.
Yeah, I don't believe
not,
that.
Not from what I see. Not the culture I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think that, I mean, it's going down. I do think it's a new trend, though, in the last 2 years. I really do. You know, some people were really scared and afraid of where that next, you know, can I rely on the grocery store? Then, you know, everybody was thinking about that for a minute. And some people chose, well, the path is going to be hunting. I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah. Americans still have some self-sufficiency in them that they like to hold on to.
Yeah. How many chickens? How many chicks got sold?
Yeah, exactly. You know, those what do they call, victory gardens, you know, that were popular 30, 40 years ago or more. You know, this is kind of a throwback to that. 1970 saw an uptick in self-reliant farming and all that. And I think that's going on again today. History repeats itself.
Sure, I agree.
And I'm not all against that. But there is an age wall that some of these biologists are warning about. And 65 years old is when most people quit hunting. And the age wall is approaching. When I last looked up this data, the average age hunter in New York State was around 51 years old. Whether that's still true or not, or it's higher, I don't know.
I mean, I'm not saying that age group, but I'm definitely going places that age group wouldn't typically want to go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm attracted to, and it doesn't show it. But, yeah, I could see that in the aging group.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess maybe they're not going where you're going, but what's the average age of your hunting club?
It's old and declining. So yeah. It's in our bylaws. We can't have more than 16 members. There hasn't been more than 12 since I've been a member. And yeah. We were just thinking the other day, based on our bylaws and what it takes to get in, the next eligible member, if you keep going through, you know, sons or daughters of current members that we've been having a trend of, it's going to be 4 more years for the next, and we'll likely be more than 18 for the second, because I haven't had a kid yet.
Right.
So we're potentially 18 plus years away from our next member if this is the way things are going.
Yeah.
There's not going to be many. There'll be 6 of us in the next 20 years.
And there is a trend more in female hunters, right? You were saying that?
Yeah. I wish I looked up this data before I was asked that. But, yeah, definitely hunter ed numbers are showing that females are buying more hunting licenses out of previous trends in the last 10 years.
Right.
In the last 2.
So if you're just tuning in, tonight's topic on From the Forest is why hunt in 2021. So why hunt in 2021? Well, first reason is getting connected, right? Hunters still remain primarily as observers when they're hunting. But, I mean, it's not just about killing deer. It's also, or whatever, there's other animals to hunt. There's turkey, coyote, fox, whatnot. It's about being out in the woods. It's a reason to be out in the woods. Ginseng hunting. I like it. Just another reason. Excuse to be out there. You know?
Yep. I listened to a podcast this week of a guy that all he does is photography, wildlife photography. He says, you know what? I learn every single thing a bow hunter needs to learn, because I still have to go into the woods. I still have to find that animal. I still have to get within 20 yards. I got to take his picture.
Yeah. So there was, I forget the guy I was reading about this, but he was talking about, he wouldn't agree with that notion.
Why not?
And I agree with him, because as someone who grew up hiking before hunting, there's something about when you have the opportunity to kill something, whether it's a deer, bear, turkey, or you're predator hunting for coyote or fox, it changes things. You have a different incentive structure. Incentives matter. I'm going to talk about that with property rights maybe next week about that. But anyway, it does. It matters, you know. You just look at things differently. Oh, yeah. For example, I think I talked about this 2 years ago, but I'll talk about it again. Fishing. I used to swim at this stream in the Shongum Ridge over in Ulster County growing up. Been there a million times. You know the story? No?
I'm going to recognize it, but I'm not recalling.
Yeah, okay. So we went there throughout high school. I was there as a middle schooler. It was a beautiful stream. Waterfalls, pools. But they always told us, they meaning the Mohonk Preserve, no fish there, man. It's too acidic. Right? They pounded acid rain into our heads as little kids until we thought everything was dead. You know? There's no fish anywhere. That's what I thought. So, you know, if you're told something over and over again, you tend to believe it, as a little kid especially. And one day I'm at a bar in Kerhonkson, and this guy, we're talking about fishing, and he's like, oh yeah, that stream's got, there's trout in there. They get bigger if there was more water, but there's really nice trout in there. And I'm like, you kidding me? I'm going to go there tomorrow. Just take my motorcycle at the time, ride over there. walk downstream, walk past all the swimmers. I got my rod. As soon as I'm approaching the stream, now I'm actually looking at it in a different way. Not as a swimmer or a kid trying to hang out with his friends, but as someone looking at the stream. And I could see instantly a trout dart from under a rock. I'm like, it's freaking ridiculous. So, but here's the thing. I've been on that stream many times before, and I knew it, but not that well. Once I fished it once, I knew it better than I had learned it in 10 years. You're just paying attention more. You have more of an incentive to pay attention, at least for me. I can't speak for other people.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, I walk into the woods in a completely different eye if I'm hiking it or if I'm scouting it or if I'm hunting it.
Yeah.
I mean, I found this buck rub the other day. It was huge. There's no doubt, if I was just walking through that valley, I never would have saw it. And it's in plain sight. It's in a, I can't believe a buck stood there, because it's in a spot you wouldn't think a big buck would ever go. And it is just gouged into this tree, probably 6-inch diameter black birch, shredded to pieces. I couldn't believe it. And there's no doubt, if I was hiking, I would have, I saw this hundreds of yards away. And I got a scope on it, and I looked at it, and I was like, I don't know if that's a buck rub or not. Had I been hiking, I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's probably just a dead and dying black birch, and the bark's peeling off. He would have kept going. But I was hunting. I was like, I got to check that out. And I went all the way up to it, and I was just in awe staring at this tree for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Wondering, thinking, looking at the leaves, trying to figure out where that buck came from, where he was going to, why he picked that tree over all the other ones.
And yeah.
That valley, where he could be today. And it just makes you, like, totally honed into one spot. And you catch yourself doing that over and over throughout the day. And like you said about that stream, eventually you start piecing things together, and you're like, holy cow. You learn them just one day. I mean, you could go to a spot that you've never been before or haven't been in 10 years and know it so well by the end of an afternoon, and you can tell anybody, you can go to this tree, make a left, go to that tree, and you'll hit this rock, go up that valley, and you'll find a good spot to sit. Sit right there. That's a perfect spot. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you could describe it in detail to people.
Yeah, totally. I guess the question is, you know, do you look differently at a place once you have lived from it or hunted from it, I guess? I guess hunting, I'm not going to say for all people, but for a lot of people, the way it gets you connected to a place is it kind of removes you as a tourist.
Yeah.
An observer. And you're kind of, for lack of a better thing, you're kind of a part of it for a little while.
You are.
A hunter doesn't see themselves as different after a while, you know. When I used to hike, it was like, oh, we're in their world. You've heard people say that. We're in their world. Well, I don't feel that way when I'm hunting. I'm not in their world.
Right.
I'm just in the world. I'm there. I'm hunting.
True.
You know, when a squirrel climbs up on an adjacent tree and sees you hunting, I swear to God, they know what you're doing. They're like, oh, this guy. You're waiting for a deer.
Sitting on that limb right in front of your face.
Right.
Yeah.
But something about.
Yeah, I've got a bow spot that I've driven by my whole life. And it's just this spot. It's not that romantic spot. You're not up in the woods. You're kind of between a cemetery and a swamp and a road and a main road with a lot of heavy traffic on it and trucks. And there's people walking and dogs barking and you know, not that attractive backwoods spot, but driven by it my whole life. But now when I drive by, I look at my tree.
Yeah.
It's like, there's the spot. That's my tree that I sit in right there. I wonder what's walked by that tree. I saw a bobcat there a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a huge buck there once that I saw dozens of does. And it's just the spot, you know. And you just catch a glimpse of the tree, and now all these memories come back. And
it doesn't have to be a vast wilderness area.
No.
To be interesting. Before I started hunting, I had to go to, you know, the Slide Mountain Wilderness areas, 50,000 acres. I had to go to the Schwank Ridge and be in these remote areas in order to enjoy myself. It had to be remote as possible. But then when you get into hunting, it could be a 5-acre parcel.
Right.
And if it's good habitat, it's good to go. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Does it hold turkeys? Is it have young growth? Does it have wild apple trees? And who's going to visit those? That matters.
Yeah.
You know, it, and you know what? I don't care if you're in the middle of nowhere or you're 500 feet from your house in the backyard. If you hear a deer coming through the woods at you, that's always a good day.
Yep, and you have the same feelings running through you, the same level of excitement.
Totally. It's like, who cares? There's a deer walking towards me, and that's right. That's pretty good. So, let's see. The second thing, why hunt 2021? Well, actually, I'm going to say this is the guy I was talking about. Yeah, James Swan, psychologist and hunter. I was reading his article in American Hunter, and he was talking about getting connected. Yeah, let me say this one more thing. He's saying people who don't get outside often and depend on electronic media are likely to be anxious and fearful, as the media constantly report environmental crises that we can do very little about. I feel that when you hunt, every year, right, what happens? It's like around the end of October, early November, and something magical happens. The days get a little shorter, and somehow the deer know to go into rut. The bucks, right? It just happens. Or the leaves fall off, and then they grow back in the spring. I feel like when you're connected to natural processes, you're less likely to be fearful of these huge environmental crises that you hear about in the media. Because you see, no, this stuff still goes on in the woods. Grow back. There was a fire. I saw things grow back the next year.
Right.
I don't care what CNN or Fox is saying. There's deer over there. There's grouse growing. Things are still going on. Things aren't that bad.
Right. That turkey's still gobbled.
Yeah.
True. That's a good way to think about it. Yeah, absolutely. There's a forested stand that I go back to, and we were just talking about it in the woods the other day. Met there for lunch. And I remember when I hunted it when I was a young person, and we all met up for lunch there, and it was this big, tall stand, a beautiful, huge sugar maple next to these giant Norway spruce. It's kind of like a mystical, magical forest thing. Terrible for deer hunting, but it's a good spot to meet for lunch.
Yeah.
Well, now half of the, every time we go, more and more of those Norway spruces are blown down. They're all tumbling over. And now we go there for lunch, but everybody talks about how many deer they kicked out of there on their way to the lunch spot. It's like, we got to stop coming here for lunch. This is the best deer hunting on the whole hill.
Right.
But it just goes that all these natural changes are constantly happening. And like you said, a hunter feels more grounded to them. We understand that, yeah, trees blow over. They fall down. It's not the end of the world. And the habitat growing back is producing some of the conditions that we're striving for in these woods.
Yeah.
And it's keeping wildlife alive and there and healthy.
It's way more resilient, the forest, than the media reports on. I mean, my favorite place growing up was an abandoned housing development. Why? Because it just, that's where the black raspberries grew. They I never seen them grow as well since then. It's because the excavator could produce mineral soil, and those black caps had perfect growing condition.
There you go.
Things grow back, man. So I just think when you're in that rural mindset, you're just less impacted by that kind of the boy who cries wolf kind of thing when it comes to environmental issues. Because you see the sun goes up, goes down, deer keep, you know, doing their thing. Toms keep, every spring they keep calling, you know. And farmers are even more attuned in many ways. You know, they see catastrophe all the time when one of their animals probably dies. Mm-hmm. But then they see rebirth, you know what I mean?
Right.
When you're in tune with these things, I just feel like you're going to be more, less impacted by this, someone trying to get your attention online.
Right. You could filter through it and actually see, because there are some issues out there. There's definitely problems we need to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And it's easier to filter through and see what really matters.
Hunters aren't immune to them either. And I was thinking about that. I mean, are hunters, can hunters be as dramatic? And, you know, EHD that we talked about last 2 weeks ago,
yeah,
episodic hemorrhagic disease. But you know, I found a lot of information on that, and there was a lot of hunters like, well, slow down. There's deer out there. They're repopulating. It's going to be fine. Didn't like freak out.
Might have one bad year.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't see that. There was some hunters like, this is terrible, bad. But you got to look long term. And I feel like that's what people who are outside and attuned with nature, in quotes, are about, right? Looking long term.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this year's bad, but let's look at the overall picture. I feel like hunting forces you to do that.
It does. It does.
You know? So the second reason to hunt in 2021, we got to get a move on this, is meat. I mean, come on.
Well, that's just the best reward out there, right? Your efforts are rewarded with this awesomely natural, you can't replicate food source.
What do you think is the biggest misunderstanding people have about hunters and meat?
Wastefulness?
Yeah. Have you ever known anyone to just leave the deer in the woods?
Never.
I've never known a person. I've been hunting 20 years, and I've never known a person. I've heard of it. I remember in high school when we used to hunt in Beacon. Yeah, there was a small class of people who were poaching deer from a sunroof of a car. This is lethal. Shine their lights, stick out, shoot them with a compound bow.
Highly illegal.
Highly illegal. But to say that is normal or even significant amongst hunters is, to me, an injustice. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, no one's leaving. You know, it seems like at the end of every hunting story, it ends with someone, you know, puffing out their chest and bragging about what they had to do, what great lengths they went to get the animal out of the woods. Like, I had to drag him 800 yards uphill both ways.
Both ways.
You know, I mean, it happens a lot. I just did it to you. I told you a story today, and my bear was no easy feat.
I dragged him 3 miles.
There was no easy feat getting him out of the woods, and that was the best part of it. I tell you what, we all got together, and we got, as a team, got it done.
I could beat this. I remember a guy telling me, I had to drag it out miles, and then I had to use my handgun to keep the coyotes away. They were coming at me.
Oh, my God. I heard the same one about a mountain lion once. It's like, all right, come on.
I was like, Jesus. Man, this is crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the self-sufficiency thing is definitely pretty cool. I have to admit this. I'll be totally honest. When I first got back into hunting, around when I was 22 years old or so, took a hiatus. I wrote an article about how college is a killer for hunting, and it almost killed hunting for me. I just did not put time into hunting. I was focused on college.
Right.
And where I went in Syracuse, I just didn't feel like learning to hunt in Syracuse.
Right.
So I got back into it, and at first I was just happy to have my own meat. I didn't even care how much it tasted, I'll be honest with you. You know? Then throughout the years, I began to get used to venison. Taste buds started to change. And I started to learn how to cook it. I like to believe I cook it totally different than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I actually prefer it.
Yeah, me too.
Whereas I used to say that, and I don't think I was being totally genuine. Now, I can say it and be like, yeah, no, I actually like it better than beefsteak at this point. I'm not going to say there's beef out there. I'll eat it. Eat it. It's great. It's great meat.
Oh, I love a beefsteak. Don't
I like
get me
all
wrong.
Meat. Yeah.
I like to, you know, if I go out to a birthday dinner or something, I'm getting me a beefsteak.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, as I'm eating it, I'm thinking and comparing the differences to the venison steak that I have 3 times a week or more.
Yeah.
And it's alarming what goes through your head, and it's like, man, that flavor is just not in venison. It's not bad. I mean, it can't be bad because beef wouldn't have the market it does today if it was bad meat, but it's distinctly different. I think that's where people who taste venison once a year or twice a year think of it as being gamey or irony or something, whatever you know, verb they use to describe it. Tell you what, I mean, if you eat nothing but venison as your primary meat source, that's something you actually strive for. It's something you look forward to. It's not a gaminess.
I had a good piece of beef a couple weeks ago, but I'll be honest, the last few times it tastes grassy to me.
Yeah.
And I don't like it, you know? You know what it is? It's like we used to have taste tests at Frost Valley when I used to work there for the kids. Most kids would pick corn syrup. It's what they're used to.
Mm.
I'm not saying it's better or worse. It's just that, you know, it's what they're used to. And if you grew up on maple syrup, you'd probably like it, you know?
Right.
My kids are weird. They, right now, unless, you know, someone teaches them otherwise, and I hope not, They prefer venison. These kids are killing me, man. I only got one piece out of the inner loin.
Oh, no.
They fight over it, and it's totally genuine because they don't eat chicken nuggets. What kind of crazy kids don't eat chicken nuggets?
They want.
I eat chicken nuggets. Nothing wrong with nuggets. Beef, they'll let it sit there. Hamburgers, hot dogs, they kind of pick around it. These kids, you give them steak, venison steak, they're nuts. They've, like, lost their minds. They're like a bunch of pack of jackals, you know?
Something instinctual?
I don't know. It's just what they're, I guess, they're used to. So I think that does matter. Also, besides the meat, you know, there's cool things you can make from deer. There's, you can make soap from the fat. You know, you can, bear fat is totally edible to eat.
Yep.
It's excellent. There's hides. There's all sorts. Some people even make tools from the bones. People do all sorts of cool things from the animals they take. Yeah, if you're into fur bearers, I mean, that's a whole different world, trapping.
Right.
You know? So, okay, we'll take a break here. Next, we'll talk about the ecological reasons to why hunt in 2021.
Standing there on that lawn, discount shades, store-bought tan, flip-flops and cut-off jeans. Somewhere between that setting sun, I'm on fire, I'm born to run. You looked at me and I was done, but we were just getting started. I was singing to you, you were singing to me. I was so alive, never been more free. Fired up my daddy's lighter and we sang, oh, oh, oh. Stayed there till they forced us out and took the long way to your house. I can still hear the sound of you saying don't go. When I think about you, I think about 17. I think about my old G. I think about the stars in the sky. Funny how a melody sounds like a memory. Like a soundtrack to a July Saturday night. Springsteen. You probably wouldn't even know who I am, but if I whispered your name, I bet still be a spark from back when I was gasoline and this old tattoo had brand new ink, and we didn't care what your mama think about your name on my arm. Baby, is it spring or is it summer? The guitar sound or the beat of that drummer you hear sometimes late at night on your radio, even though you're a million miles away. When you hit on in a USA, you relived those glory days so long ago. When you think about me, do you think about 17? Do you think about my OG? Think about the stars in the sky. Funny how a melody sounds like a memory, like a soundtrack to a July Saturday night.
Well, I don't really care for Springsteen, but I don't care. That's a good song. Eric Church.
Catchy tune.
It's a poppy tune, but whatever. It's a good one. So, another reason to hunt in 2021. We're going to graze over this ecological reasons. John's right. We've had a million shows on why hunting is good for the ecology, reducing deer browse. I think I'm going to stop right there, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that information's available anywhere you look. Every state agency's preaching it. But not only deer, but just the whole, you know, pillars of North American wildlife management and how it's a, you know, positive input cycle. And we could have other shows on that.
Yeah. So let's go to challenges and achievement. To me, hunting, you've seen the bumper stickers. What is it? Kids that hunt don't rob but little old ladies. Yeah. It used to be more popular in the 90s when there was a strong anti-hunting sentiment. I feel like that's improved. In the 90s when I hunted in New Paltz, we got hurt. I mean, the harassment was high. We used to change our clothes while if we were walking down the road, changing the hunting clothes, going to the woods. I mean, it was that bad. It was just terrible.
I never experienced that.
Yeah, a lot of Hudson Valley hunters have caps on their trucks to this day.
Just to hide what they're
doing. Because, yeah, I'm one of them. It's just, it became kind of behavioral. But in any case, I think it does teach some good traits, character traits. And some people, I can hear them right now, some anti-hunters, serial killing maybe.
I could probably.
All right, well, I disagree with that. We're hunting deer here, or turkeys, not human beings. But, I've played sports my entire life, and sports do teach good things as well, you know, work ethic and stuff. But hunting is on the honor system. I know we have game laws and everything, but really you're out there by yourself, and, you know, no one tells you to take an ethical shot. You either take an ethical shot or you don't. No one's going to see it. And when you screw up and you see the deer or bear or whatever running away, you have no one else usually to blame.
Right.
But yourself.
Yep.
And it's very humbling. And to miss a deer after hours and hours of sitting or stalking is, it's humbling.
It's like standing in the end zone wide open or shooting a three-pointer at the buzzer and just watching it float away as a miss, you know? It's a sports-like comparison.
Yeah.
You give it your all, it's letting me think about all season or all off-season and just to let it go by and screw it up. There can be a game-like mentality to it, and that's attractive to some people. I'm just going to say it. I think hunters hide that. I think they hide it too much.
Yeah.
But
what about the guys on YouTube but they kill the big one?
And they cry. I don't know. There's a spectrum, I guess.
But I'm watching those videos, and my wife is listening in the background doing something else. She's like, is that guy all – what is going on? Is that guy all right? I'm like, it's embarrassing. I mean, sometimes I have to say, when the guy starts crying and praising everything, I'm like, all right, I get it. But Jesus, just reel it in. I mean, you're on camera. Anyway, I digress.
Well, I just want to be honest. And I hear it over. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I hear it over and over. And people trying to explain themselves. And they're like, well, it's for the meat. And it's for the... It's this. You know, it is. It absolutely is. And that was our second talking point we talked about tonight. But honestly, I mean, you can probably buy meat cheaper.
Yeah.
You can acquire it easier. You can drive to a grocery store within 10 minutes of anyone's house and get your meal.
Right.
For cheaper. So it's there. It's part of it. But that's not why we hunt. There's a lot of other reasons. And one of those many other reasons is an achievement base to it. There is that game-like quality that humans are naturally attracted to. It doesn't matter what it is. Something always turns into a competition with humans. That's a natural thing. And it doesn't have to be a competition between other people and other hunters, but sometimes it's within yourself, too. It's like, well, this is what happened last year. How can I better that? How can I make this more fulfilling for me? Because you're right. It's just you in the woods. You know, maybe I screwed up last year. How do I make this happen and not repeat last year?
Right. Yeah.
And that's the game-like aspect that drives a hunter to keep going, I think.
Absolutely, and it doesn't matter what technology you have. The deer do have an upper hand. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, well, they live it every day, right? And you're not the only predator in the woods. So,
right. You know, and the technology may have increased, but our time in the woods is less. I mean, if you talk to older guys, they used to hunt and sit all day. People don't do that really much anymore.
No, I don't know anybody that sits in one spot all day. Maybe they'll do it one day out of the whole season.
Yeah, that's I got to give it to someone who does that. I want to talk about the memories as well. There's another reason why people hunt. People look down on trophy hunting, right? So when I say trophy hunting, I mean I got one big buck with the bow, and I got one big buck with the gun. And both those deer are mounted on either side of my wood stove in my living room. You know, and I used to be a person that looked down upon that too. But then, after I started hunting, I was like, you know what? These are just—they're just ways to remember. Because how many deer have you killed or animals, and you don't even know? You don't even remember. You don't remember.
I don't. I was legitimately thinking about this driving in the last week, and I just wish I've kept the journal. And I'm only 28 years old here. I wish I've kept a journal on every turkey and deer and anything. I wish I just kept a one-paragraph memory of what I did that day, what it was like, and maybe the weather conditions. And one paragraph. And I don't even know how many I've forgotten.
Yeah, exactly. But you can remember the ones that are mounted on your wall.
There's two on my wall in the house, and the rest go in the garage. The antlers are in the rafters, and I can take down every single one, and I can tell you the whole story because I remember each antler.
Yeah.
I can tell you everything. I can probably tell you what I ate for breakfast that morning on that deer.
Yeah.
But the does and the in-betweens that weren't kept somehow, I don't remember a thing.
Right.
Maybe a few, you know, a few that stick out, but I couldn't go in chronological order and tell you each one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can tell you the whole day of each one of those bucks that I got, and it was, otherwise, you know, just wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah.
So for that reason alone, that's worth something, I think.
Sure.
It's absolutely pretty neat, you know?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, people get out in the woods for other reasons, and hiking's one of them, but can you tell me everything about your hike and what you ate for breakfast that day and how, in every little thing you felt throughout the moments reaching the top? Probably not.
Yeah, and the thing is, how often do people tell stories anymore?
Like deer camp does.
That's what I'm saying. That's the only time, right? Or if you ask a hunter, hey, what's the deal behind that mounted buck head? And they will tell you, most likely, if they're like most hunters, whether you want to hear it or not, just even if he's told, he may have already told it to you. He'll tell you it again. I don't care.
I know a lot of people. Some repeat stories. I could probably tell it more accurately than they can because their stories morph over time.
That's when you hear it. All right, we're going to have to drink because I know I've already heard this one. And
so there I was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I woke up. Wait, we know that.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
He's not a good story to tell her.
Yeah, and the camaraderie at camp, right? I mean, a lot of people don't have that, and that's okay, but you have camaraderie of some sort, some way of telling a story, but... You know, what else, other than holidays, gets a group of people together regularly and every single year to do the same thing? Very, very rare.
I don't know.
I mean, people talk, oh, I have my buddies and I go on a trip. Yeah, but not the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
You guys miss a year or two because of whatever silly reason, or you did something different. But deer camp is the same. And, I mean, the camp I go to, my grandfather helped build it in 1954.
Yeah,
it's like I can sit there on the same darn wooden bench that he sat on and tell stories like he did. And, you know, it's timeless in a way. It's very fun.
Well, that's what a guy was writing about in one of these magazines. He called it the Ghost of Autumn. Maybe you've read it. But that's when he hunts. He feels the metaphorical ghost of autumn of people who have hunted before him, who will probably hunt after him. But yeah, his ancestors, other people who he never even met, you know they've hunted there.
Right.
You know people have probably hunted there for thousands of years.
Sure, that terrain funnel has been there, been the notch in that hill for so long that 10,000 years ago somebody was sitting there trying to sling an arrow.
Totally. More recently, of course, but how many times we're talking about this, you put up a tree stand and you're like, this is a good spot, this is a great spot, I like this spot. You're looking around, and somehow you missed that there's an old remnant of a wooden tree stand from probably 40 years ago.
Adjacent to the next tree over, yeah.
You're like, oh, somebody thought this was a good spot a long time ago.
Yep, yep.
Because nobody puts up wooden tree stands really anymore, and they're not as common.
Yep, that's happened many a times.
Those are the best spots because wooden tree stands are a pain in the butt to do.
Right.
So if someone brought nails and a hammer and wood to that spot, it tells you they thought it was a pretty darn good spot.
Right. And wood's not cheap. You know, these new tree stands, they're not cheap, but you can move them.
You can move them.
So exactly. If someone invested that much time and money and energy to something he's never going to move again, holy cow.
Well, we're out of time. I wanted to go into some of those risk rates, comparing hunting to other activities, but maybe we'll do it next time, I guess. We'll
probably do a little big show on it. Why don't you share one?
All right, go ahead.
I like to see. So I want to share. You have written down here that per 100,000 in 2019, there was 1.8 incidents, and that is not fatalities. That is incidents. Most of those incidents are self-inflicted. Someone is being poorly handling a firearm. We'll just say, keep it at that. 1.8 per 100,000 in hunters. Mountain hiking, 1 in 15,000.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a similar activity that I hear often. Well, if it's mostly about just being in the woods, why don't you just go for a hike? Well, we went through all the reasons above and beyond why we like to be in the woods and like to hunt. And, man, hikers are getting hurt a lot more.
I've known several places where hikers have died in the woods. So, yeah. And when I go alone in the woods, I think about it. To be careful.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, good point.
It's a safe activity when done right. And, you know, hunters self-police themselves pretty well and self-police each other.
Yep.
It's a safe thing.
Well, that's all time we have on From the Forest. And tonight's topic was Why Hunt in 2021. And see you next week.
Good night, everyone.
All right, take care. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, did appear upon his mantle shining the face of one so dear who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town where the river runs down from the forest. With a mighty roar, big jet soars above the canyon streets, and the con men con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soldier